You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 221 for the week of August 20th, 2017. Welcome back, listeners, to the longest-running podcast dedicated to the epic glory of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice, Ice and Fire. Wow, I haven't messed that up in a long time. And sometimes Game of Thrones. As always,
this is Ashley.
This is Amin.
And this is Kyle. Ashley, you're back with us today. And you got a lot to talk about in this episode, right?
Ashley has blue eyes now at this season.
There you go. I love it. Love it. So, lemon cake ratings. Ashley, what are you going to give it?
A 2.
Whoa! Okay. Okay.
I'll give it a 4 out of 5. I thought overall it was pretty good. There's problems with it, but you have to judge each episode by its own season. And within the season, it's 4 out of 5.
Yeah. I guess I'm going to go with a 3. I just feel like I'm giving everything 3s this season, except for the Loot Train episode. I love that one. Yeah, definitely some cool stuff, and definitely some, wow, these writers are getting sloppy type of stuff. So, yeah, I guess with that said, let's dive into it. There's 3 locations in this one, but most of the stuff is happening beyond the wall, which is the title of episode 6. So we have these guys venturing out. And they're pairing up. We're getting these little, I like to call them fan service scenes between two characters. A lot of interactions. I was like, why do I want to see those two? Oh, that's why they've both been undead. Oh, Brienne, they have that going for them. Oh, Gendry and the Brotherhood. Did any of these scenes stick out to you guys? Which ones did you like the most? What'd you think about them?
I liked Sandor being Sandor again. That was probably my favorite part of the episode.
Busting on Tormund the whole time.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah, but then Tormund just bounced back. Like, he didn't bother him at all.
They're kind of, you know, cut from the same cloth kind of people.
Mm. How many shippers do you think are out there for that duo now?
What, Brienne and Tormund?
No, Tormund and the Hound.
Oh, that's all you, Kyle.
Are you kidding me? Come on.
But he clarified right after that he was interested in Brienne. I mean, I think that supports the Brienne relationship even. Well, I guess we already knew Tormund would like Brienne. Like, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, well, that ain't going to stop the shippers. Yeah. Come on. And then later on, the Hound saves Tormund. I mean, come on. That's a fun relationship. So we have Gendry being mad at the Brotherhood because they sold him off. I liked his story. It was kind of like, wait, she stripped me naked and she tied me to a bed. And they're like, whoa, this sounds like a pretty good story. I don't know what the problem is here.
Yeah, I'm still mad at the Brotherhood, too, for being stupid back then. But that's okay.
So they explained it as in they needed money. So they were selling them off, right?
Yeah.
Okay. all right. What'd you think of
like he's justified to being a little ticked off about that.
Yeah. And they're like, why are you ticked off? We sold you into like basic slavery. We didn't know what was going to happen to you, but we needed money. You should be happy.
Yeah. But they're also like, you're alive. So what? So nothing bad came of it.
I think the point the Hound made, it's like, we have bigger problems now than to focus on the past. We've got to focus on what's going on right now.
Yeah. Well, he was getting a little whiny.
Yes, that's right.
Yep. This is right after the off camera, 20 meter dash they did to find out that Gendry's the fastest one of them. What'd you guys think of the Longclaw scene? John kind of trying to give the sword back to Jorah.
Made me wonder why he didn't try to give it back to Lyanna.
Yes, that's exactly.
Right. That's right, yeah. Well, I guess that was the weird thing. I thought maybe they could have a loaner agreement that John has it during his life and then it goes back to the Mormons, but that's not the case. And then, that's really what the old Mormon did, though. He kind of just gave it to John. He didn't even, like, you think he could have. He gave away the sword for all time? Like, that was a bit...
Well, like, I don't know. He's been at the wall for so long, he probably doesn't realize what a badass Lyanna is. But, I mean, John knows. Hmm. He could have been like, dude, this sword, you know, like, maybe as a wedding gift to Lyanna when she's old enough.
Well, even in the books, he knows that his sister is a badass. He's like, I love her and I hate her at the same time. But, like, he knows that she's strong. But it's like, you're giving away the family sword for all time. It's actually quite a big switch there. But they did that in the books too, so.
I feel like maybe in the books or something, like he'll pass it on back to House Mormont after, you know, he's done.
Yeah, because technically he's not supposed to have kids anymore anyway, right? So eventually he would die and then it would go back.
Now, is that a thing because he's raised from the dead, he can't have kids? Is that a...
No? Or no, even when the sword was given to him, he shouldn't have kids, right? He was a brother of the Night's Watch.
True.
So that maybe that was in Mormont's mind. It was like, you use it in this time, and then we'll figure out what to do after that.
Yeah, we'll change the hilt to like a mermaid, and we'll give it to one of the Manderlys. I thought this was such a typical Jon scene where... He's like, hey, we're about to go fight the others and the walkers where I definitely need this Valyrian steel blade, but I'm just going to give it to you. Instead of either A, giving it to him before they even left the wall so then Jon could still have a sword or something to fight with, or B, waiting to see if Jorah even survives and then he can, you know, if Jorah survives, then he can offer him the sword. But chances are Jorah was going to die and then he would have to take the sword back after he gave it to him anyway. From his dead corpse. Or you'd have a white with a Valyrian steel blade. Like, come on, Jon. This is the worst timing, buddy. Come on. Before or after. Not during the mission. But
that's right.
But it is Jon. He's like being so noble, and we finally had a chance to shit's been crazy. We finally had a chance to talk. Here's the sword, it's yours. Looking at it that way, it's nice, but god damn it, Jon, timing.
People never,
nice gesture.
Yes. Yeah,
well, people never talk on ships in this world. That's the thing. Like, when you go in the ships, you go into, like, carbonite, and you never talk. That's how they get around really quickly. It's like light speed.
That's how they travel so fast, is that nobody talks or does anything. They just walk as fast as they can, and they get there. So we have Jon and Beric talking. We have the two undead R'hllor warriors here having their conversation. And I thought this was a pretty cool scene. I liked that Beric is like... Maybe we were brought back because we can defend those who can't defend themselves. We are the shield that guards the realms of men. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's why we are back, because we can do that. I thought that was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah.
I had no issue with that.
Well, the whole early interactions were positive, I think. That was taking advantage of, like, as we said last episode, the idea for going here was dumb, but good things come out of it, and the interactions were good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it was the best part of the episode, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we touched on it, but the Tormund and the Hound. Oh, do you hate wildlings? No, I hate gingers.
At that point, I'm just like, Sansa's a ginger.
Yeah, exactly. But I kind of think that's why he said, he's like, he was sort of suppressing that love for an underage child that he had earlier in the show. But I loved it when he started talking about Brienne. Oh, yeah, she's going to rip out your heart, eat, make stew, whatever he said. And he's like, oh, you do know her. Yeah. Oh, man. Just so much fun. So much fun there. All their conversations get side railed when they come across zombie polar bear. That scene was pretty cool. The special effects were awesome. That bear looked massive and vicious. Holy cow.
Just remember, if you were wondering where Ghost is, that's where the budget went.
Yeah, it's true. No room for these dire. Well, where the hell is Ghost? Is Ghost at Dragonstone, or is he at Eastwatch? Where is this
stuff? Ghost would be still at Winterfell, I suppose, right? He left it because, remember, they did just... Yeah, he'd be still at Winterfell sitting there.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to be like Optimus Prime's trailer, where wherever he needs him, he'll just show up, you know?
Because otherwise a ghost would have been really helpful
tracking down undead things, I feel like. Yeah. It
well, they had the Hound's vision of the Arrowhead Mountain, so that's all they needed to find where they were going, right? But they fight this bear, and I gotta say, here's my first thing. Writer's getting sloppy here. They light that bear on fire, and that bear does not give a shit that is on fire. Fire is supposed to be these guys' kryptonite, right? Yeah. And this bear is on fire, and he's like, whatever, I don't care. I'm still going to eat everybody.
Well, I think it definitely helped take it down, though, but you're right. Maybe it would have gone down faster.
Like, I thought these things on fire, and they were like, ah! And they ran, like...
Yeah. The human whites, definitely, yeah. I'm guessing the animals as well.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding it. And we see that Jorah, it appears, as if he's wielding two dragonglass daggers. And in the books, at least, the dragonglass isn't for the whites. But in the show now, I guess, dragonglass is for all the undead dudes.
Yeah. I think in the show, it is for everything. In the books, it probably is not. I think what happened was when they used it, it hit armor and it broke off. So I guess technically it could still be, but I don't think the books are angling that way. I think the books are going to save Obsidian just for White Walkers.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, we haven't actually seen what happened, because usually people are wearing like the armor and it just breaks off. Because the dead people will be wearing like the normal Westeros armor. And yeah. So Sam used one and then it just broke off the armor. It didn't even make contact.
So we're not sure. Okay.
We're not sure. But I mean, in reality, even if it does have an effect, the armor will protect most of them, right? Their armor is more human based, whereas the others have their own armor that fails to the...
I gotta imagine not many whites have actual armor. It's more kind of scraps and what... It'll be like black leather from the brothers, and it'll be whatever bones and stuff from the wildlings.
Well, every like military guy that dies to them now, if they get south of the wall, though, will have his own armor, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do want to say, like, these undead whites look a lot better than the ones that attacked Bran earlier.
Oh yeah, okay.
I thought like that scene that they were talking about, how it was the most expensive scene they filmed. It's like this looked way better than those undead ones.
I wouldn't be surprised if their budget is getting bigger per episode, because
the
show, and this is not typical for shows, but the rating, like the viewership, is actually still hitting its peak even in these later seasons, which isn't usually a thing. Like Breaking Bad did that, but most shows kind of peak in the middle and then they sort of teeter out. But this show's getting more viewers, so I'm sure they're giving it. Throwing more money at it. So we got the bear there. Thoros goes down for a little bit, and then but he's not out. They burn him. They cauterize his whole torso. And I gotta say, like, my favorite moments of this whole episode are when Thoros and Beric are just lighting their swords up and going to town. Like, every time they light it up, like the lightsaber, there's like shoo. And the first time they do it, when the bear shows up, and when everybody scatters, there's no fanfare behind it. The two of them are just in the background, and they just light it up and start the fight. And I'm like, that is so awesome that they just do that. I love it. I loved it. Yes, please. Those swords would be so brittle and break, though. But hey, you know, whatever. Unless it's actually Lightbringer.
Well, it's magical type fire. But are they cut? Are they actually cutting, and then their blood is going on the sword, or is it something else? Like, is that what they're doing there?
I assumed it was some sort of blood magic. Like he's cutting his hand, and it's just kind of. But who knows? I don't know. So then, after the bear attack, we get more of these scenes. We get Jorah talking to Thoros, which I thought was pretty cool, because Jorah's like, "You were like a god when you broke through the castle wall on Pike," and Thoros is just like, "Oh, I was just really drunk." I enjoyed that interaction. That was fun.
I liked him talking about past events. You know, like, hey, there's this whole history here that could also be a show.
Yeah. And it's sounding like Robert's Rebellion is going to be the spin-off show that HBO is creating. Every day, I think more news is coming out that it's going to be the spin-off show from this is going to be Robert's Rebellion. So I wouldn't be surprised if Thoros, that actor, they're sort of laying the groundwork for, hey, this actor's going to be coming back, and he's going to be doing some stuff on cool stuff on Pike, and he's going to be the drunkard.
Well, that's a bit of a, I guess that's a bridge. Yeah, that's a bridge between the two periods.
What did I say? I meant Robert's Rebellion. What was I say? What did I say?
No. Well, when he goes to Pike, isn't that part of the Greyjoy Rebellion?
Yeah, it's part of the Greyjoy Rebellion, but it's in between the series and Robert's Rebellion. I guess it could be like a later.
You guys are right. I am drunk right now and totally, I totally forgot my rebellions.
Colin, I don't even remember this episode.
I'm getting my rebellions all mixed up, guys.
Well, Thor's probably drunk for both of them.
I apologize. My shocking lack of knowledge is showing through. So then they find the Arrowhead Mountain and they go there, and there's a White Walker with a little, like, you know, seven dudes just walking around.
Yeah.
From what people have retweeted me saying is that it was like a scouting party, I guess. Yeah. Let me put this into your heads before we even go into all this, which make things make more sense. Do you think the Night King was laying a trap to get the dragons to come up there? Do you think he knew of any of this? Was he completely taken off guard in the surprise and the attack of everything? Or if you could look at it through the lens of the Night King has sort of been plotting all this. He wanted them to come north, and he was hoping a dragon would come so that he could get it. If you look at it through that way, sending out little scouting parties and little, like, teasers, little lures for the Suicide Seven here to sort of attack so then they could overpower them. It makes a little bit more sense in my head than just, oh, there's a White Walker walking around with a couple buddies.
Yeah, I think what made me kind of think about that is just the Night King didn't seem surprised at all to see the dragons when they came in. He's just like, eh, dragons. So I feel like even if it wasn't meant that way, it makes the episode a lot better if you think that the whole thing was a setup. There's some things that don't quite fit with that, and we'll point that out as we go forward, but most things can fit under that rubric that this is all a setup.
Okay. Cool. So we get this fight where John kills the White Walker, and we get this major reveal here. I don't know if we knew this. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, if you kill a White Walker, all the whites that White Walker personally created are destroyed.
No, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's new. That's new information.
That is new info, but we learned that in this episode. So that sort of leads us to believe that all he has to do is take out the Night King, and then the whole army will be destroyed. So really, they just need to hire a faceless man to go kill the Night King. And boom, we're done. Problem solved. But in this scene, they kill him, and oh, it just so happens they get so lucky. Just one of the whites doesn't die. Yeah. lazy. But yeah.
No, it's set up or it's R'hllor or it's both. That's I have to go, because otherwise, yeah, it's just. I mean, in reality, it's probably just lazy writing.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you can believe that. Like R'hllor sort of pointed them. Like they gave the Hound the vision to go to the Arrow Mountain because this particular group was going to be there, and this particular group they would just be able to. They'd kill the White Walker, and one of them would be left, which is exactly what they were looking for. So you can definitely see, like, divine providence.
Most of the book fandom is skeptical on R'hllor's existence at all. Like, the magic exists, but in fact, of having a deity there running it, they're skeptical of that. Just to note that.
They get surrounded on this rock in the middle of this pond. And but Gendry got sent off because he's the fastest. So he got sent off to run back to the wall, apparently.
Wasn't he the youngest?
I feel like someone who's been around the north a bit longer might be better at running in snow than someone from King's Landing. Just a thought.
Yeah, but who's been rowing a boat for a couple of seasons?
They're really buff. Gendry is a cardio commercial. Like, he rows, he runs, he swings his hammer. Like, he's the workout guy. So Gendry runs off. He does indeed make it to the wall, which makes me wonder why the Night King is taking so long to get there. if Gendry can just run there in a little bit. Yeah. But anyway, they get to the wall. They instantly get the Raven off. The Raven gets all the way down to Dragonstone immediately. It's the cell phone Raven. And so we're at Dragonstone.
Raven is a text message. That's basically
exactly. But Dany eventually takes off. She takes off. But before she takes off, let's go to Dragonstone for a minute. She's talking to Tyrion. She doesn't want Tyrion to be a hero, guys. She doesn't want him to be a hero because people like Drogo and Jorah and Dario and this guy, what's his name, Jon Snow, are heroes. I love Tyrion calling her out on this here.
Yeah.
So do you still think they're not into each other, Ashley?
I guess they are.
I know last week you didn't see it. I feel like they slapped you in the face with it on this episode.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to ignore at this point.
Yeah, well, two characters being into each other is the writers say they're into each other. I think Ashley was saying more the road getting there was not so good to get to this point. I suspect.
I just wasn't feeling it before, like the. They're kind of forcing the relationship.
Yeah,
on
but actually, once you saw those scars, though, right? You like scars. That the help.
Chicks dig scars, right?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yes.
They like caves. They like scars.
They like it when guys bend the knee.
Dany really likes when guys
all the bend the knee jokes.
Bend the knee. So funny. But then we have this scene. What did you feel about Tyrion in this? Tyrion was like, oh, well, I promised Jaime that I would keep you from doing anything impulsive. Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah.
This, I was like, whoa, Tyrion, you are treading on thin ice here. I couldn't believe the things he was saying to her.
Yeah. He was like, oh, I am seeing it from the Lannister perspective. It's just like, shut up, man. You're not helping your case here.
Yeah. I thought she was going to get even madder than she did. Like, I was... Woof. But we do also get in this that apparently if they do get the white, which eventually, of course, they do, that Daenerys herself is going to go to King's Landing and meet with Cersei, which I didn't know was part of the plan until this episode.
Yeah, I don't recall hearing that before. Mm. That, if it was, that wasn't clearly made.
I don't know how she's going to go to King's Landing and still be safe.
Even just with a dragon, that doesn't make sense. Got to get off the dragon at some point.
She's just yelling from the dragon, "Yeah, Cersei! Let's be friends!"
Jill, I mean, just takes. I think they kind of mentioned it in this episode. They'll just take their entire army there. So it's like, if Cersei kills her, well, then she's going to die as well. And Cersei doesn't want her to die. Mm. I guess it's a mutual destruction type scenario.
So then we get a little talk about succession here.
Yes, this point that I've been bitching about since like the beginning of the books. Kane just not caring about the fact that if she dies without a child, it's just going to lead the Seven Kingdoms back into this chaos all over again.
Yeah.
Well, my plan is that the dragons are her children. So after she dies, Drogon can just put the crown on and like chill and be like, "Hey, everybody, here's what's going to go on now." So this is bothering you. You feel like you're siding with Tyrion here. We should probably work out a plan.
Yeah, no, this is something I've been talking about in the books when we talk about in the books an issue. You know, the fact that she comes across as incredibly selfish. It's like, what's her plan? Bringing all these barbarians over to Westeros that don't understand the culture. And then if anything were to happen to her, what then?
Hmm. So what do you think she should do?
Well, just
really have a little.
That's not going to solve the baby problem, though. Because John probably can't have children either, so they're just going to be...
John, we had speculated the fact that he died, he may have issues. I mean, I think the show is going to not deal with what Martin says. I think the show is just going to say he's no different than any other person except with scars.
So are we assuming that the sun will rise in the west, set in the east, should go north, go south, go backward, go forward, blah, 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 blah. Do we assume that's going to happen before John and her hook up so that she can have a child?
In books or in show, you mean?
Yeah, if you're talking books, yes.
Well,
yes.
Let's talk both. I mean, that's our MO, right?
Well, in books, even she might even have had her period at the end of the Dance of Dragons. It wasn't clear. That was one theory, right?
Yep.
That she may already be ready to have a child. She could have a child now, but show, I think they could just skip all that and just be like, "Oh wait, now I can have kids."
Yep.
Again,
show they're just gonna be like, "Oh, I can have kids now."
You know what? What'll happen? Sam will show up and he'll read it in a book. And then she'll be able to have kids again.
He'll
examine Danny.
He'll know the salve to make to rub on, and so she can have a child. Okay, I get you.
I mean, he'll make Sam tea. He'll make Sam tea.
And Sam tea.
Yeah, opposite of moon tea.
Sam will just read it in a book.
Read it in a book.
So Danny takes off. It's like, fuck this shit. I'm going to tell her this. And I assume this is because she has fallen in love with John here. She's sick and tired. She's losing all her allies. She now feels like John is an ally and she cares about him. And so she takes off with all three of her children. Am I right in thinking that? Am I way off the mark? Like, why is this the moment where she's like, "All right, well, I didn't really believe him a couple weeks ago, but now I'm going to risk my life and my kid's life and go up there and save this guy." It's got to be because she cares about him, right?
Well, Jorah as well, right? Not just John. Yes, definitely cares about John, but Jorah's up there as well. They're both in danger.
Yep.
I also think that up to this point, she really didn't consider the dragons as being fallible. I think that she was under the belief that she had dragons, she could do anything.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, she definitely got a little bit of fallibility with the arrow bronze shot.
Mm.
But yeah, I like this. I liked the fact that she was kind of saying, "You know what? I'm a leader who's going to lead by example. I'm going to charge into battle." She's like, "I'm sick of just sitting here, losing all these people who believed in me or who wanted to help me out for whatever reasons. Time to take charge. Time to fly in." Literally. She does go down there. And we've got this fight. We've got this fight where she doesn't arrive right away, but she eventually does. What'd you think of the battle, guys? Like it, love it, problems, let it out.
Yeah, and it was a great fight. Stick on the fight right now. I mean, it was good to see it. They're doing it. The only annoying part, and you probably noticed it, is the way they filmed it. It's like, why did the Night King throw it at Viserion and not Drogon, right? The angle that he was going from, I was like, why is he throwing it there? That was just filming. They could have filmed a different angle, and then that wouldn't be in a problem.
Hmm.
Otherwise, it was a good fight, I think.
Those dragons decimated the whites. Yeah. Holy cow. I know they didn't show us any dragon fire towards the others, which I think they're holding in their pocket for the reveal that the others have that, like, you know, cold force field kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like in next episode or next season, we're going to have a dragon breathe on one, and it's not going to hurt them. So I think they're saving that. I think they're going to save that for a moment of badassness. But yeah, holy crap, the Night King can throw a javelin.
Man, he's got supernatural strength, right?
He's like Tom Brady, just hucked that thing. And but yeah, that was crazy.
He was just so badass the way he did it. He just didn't care. Like he had no surprise or anything when the dragon showed up. That's why I was thinking he was waiting for it. He just picked up the spear and he's like, okay, time to.
Yeah, but he never really has any emotion. He's a cool dude, pun intended.
When he's holding the baby in his arms, he gives a little smile when he's converting it. He's
well,
like,
it's a baby. You gotta smile when it's a baby, right?
Well, you're right. His emotions could be because, you know, frozen kind of.
You know, but what?
The other's one weakness. Babies.
Yeah.
Babies and strollers.
Oh, man. You know what I had up to
episode? You need an ice javelin for a baby and stroller. Not going to continue.
I love it. You know what I had a problem with this in the episode? There was a random red shirt whenever it was convenient for them to kill someone. They needed to establish, like, how many people were in this party and whatnot, but instead they just surprised us with, oh, my God, they're killing a good guy. Wait, who was that? Oh, it wasn't somebody I cared about. Okay, I thought it was just the seven of them left, but or the five.
They also lasted a lot longer than I thought, which might be due to the fact that the obsidian was working for them, right? Like they really took down a lot of whites.
Yeah, they took a lot down, and that lies in another problem I had is that Beric has this flaming sword. Thoros, sorry guys, Thoros is dead at this point. Rest in peace, Thoros. Beric's flaming sword doesn't have any sort of advantage against these whites, more so than, like, the hammer or whatever, or whoever's sword or whatnot. Because not everybody's got Valyrian steel and dragon glass and stuff like that, but, like, Sandor's hitting people in the head, hitting the whites in the head with the hammer, and he's taking them out in one blow. And then Beric's hitting people with his flame sword, taking them out in one blow. I feel like the fire's supposed to be the advantage here. And it's not giving Beric any sort of advantage. Like, if he didn't have the fire, he would have just been killing guys with one blow with his regular sword, like everybody else. Yeah. Right? Am I looking too much into that, or was that just, is that something that annoyed anybody else, or is that just me?
I think the point you're getting on is, I think whites are supposed to be particularly flammable, even in cold weather. Like, you just get a little fire on them, and they're done. At least that's the way I read it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they're at least supposed to be, like, afraid of it, so maybe none of the whites actually run at Beric, because he's holding fire. Mm-hmm. Well, that was another problem of mine, is that one white that they captured was, like, afraid of them?
That was kind of weird, when they're holding him.
Yeah, he's like, arr, oh, God, don't attack me! And it's like,
how independent are they is the question, and that's the one part that was a little bit... If they are independent, then it fixes the problem. Like, if it's the Night King's trap... Then why does he, like, then send them in, like, does he know Danny's coming and then he sends them in at the last second to, like, pester them? Or do they, of their own accord, go across when they saw that the rock didn't crash the ice? Like, it was, like, it kind of fell apart for that theory there.
Yeah, because I always understood the whites just, like, they don't care. They're not afraid. They just run at you like a zombie. Yeah. Like if there's a lone zombie, the zombie isn't going to be like, I'm alone. Don't know. It still comes after you because it's not thinking.
It doesn't care for its life. Right? It just goes forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when they had him, like, you know, he was like a circus freak kind of in the middle, like, oh, don't capture me again. Was like, oh,
he just kept going, like, all night. He pissed off the hound when he woke up. He's like, he was trying to sleep. I think it's going to last all the way down to King's Landing, and the next episode they'll just dump it on the ground. And like,
yeah, this, oh, God. And this whole plan to begin with, like, is hinging on a crazy lady, Cersei, seeing a dead body and acting rationally. Like, that is a terrible thing to have a plan hinged on.
She already has an undead guardian, like, right beside her.
I feel like Tyrion would have told Dany that Cersei would say, let the North and Dany deal with this issue, and then she'll take them out after they've depleted their forces fighting that. I mean, like, I feel like it's a very obvious Cersei-like move, and Tyrion would know that.
Well, that's the whole reason that they aren't just going and taking care of the Night King, is that they know that Cersei will just stab him in the back or take them out while they're focused somewhere else. Like, that's why they have to get this, show her the dead person, so there can be, like, a ceasefire or an armistice.
Well, even if they do the ceasefire, she'll probably just, like, not want to send her forces and just sit there.
Yeah, she'll just let...
Well, we'll see. We'll see how that negotiation goes.
They can always be like, hey, Cersei, we're going to take all our forces. We're going to go south of King's Landing.
Yeah.
So that the Night King takes you out first.
Well, Jon, that's not an option for Jon.
Oh, yeah, true. Because Winterfell will go down way before that. Yeah, that's
maybe Jaime, though. Maybe he's betting on Jaime. If they show Jaime the undead thing, then maybe he'll command the forces to go up north.
Oh, maybe.
That's crazy. The hope they're going with, I guess.
So, we have Viserion. I keep wanting to say Viserion, but it's... How do you properly say his name?
No, he's dead. It doesn't matter anymore. He's...
How did you say his name, Amin?
I don't know. Viserion is how I say it?
Viserion?
I almost never talked about him.
Okay, there you go.
Viserion? Yeah.
Well, he's the green one, right? He took that javelin and he exploded in a ball of flames, and then he bled a lot. There was a lot of blood. Yeah. and then he went down. But guys, the Night King and his people go to the frozen Home Depot. They get some giant chains and they pull them out and they resurrect them. And now we have an ice dragon. Let's talk about this damn ice dragon here.
Yeah. What? Is it an ice dragon is a question, or is it like a were dragon or undead dragon? Like, is it going to actually breathe ice? Is that, I guess that determines it?
That's a big question. Is it going to breathe fire? Is it going to breathe ice?
Or nothing. Or nothing, potentially.
Oh, well, that would be disappointing. Yeah. What good would that be?
Well, it's still huge.
That would ruin all the excitement. As if you didn't.
I think nothing would make more sense because, like, we had this discussion at Comic-Con. We were like, can they even raise these things? They're such like fire creatures, right? They're so tied to that. And then, well, you raised it, but it could be that it could no longer generate the heat for fire. But then, how can it suddenly just shoot ice out? Like, other than just magic? I mean, it could just be just magic. It
could be cold. Shoots ice out. Cold flame.
Like, what is generating the cold
fire? His cold, like, frozen heart.
His organs are going to go the opposite direction. Like, how are they going to produce ice? It just is.
Well, how does a dragon produce fire?
Well, they probably have like a gas in there that it gets ignited.
All right. Well, the guy's got an air conditioner. The ice dragon has an air conditioner in its stomach.
Super cools the gas.
It's got some dry ice down there or something. Come on. We're talking about magic here.
It's got to be the other's magic through the dragon that does it. Then it could do the ice. So, yeah. Yep. It would be from that.
So I guess people are arguing because if it could breathe fire, it could easily go to the wall and melt the wall. But if it breathes ice, it can't. It could go to the wall and make the wall bigger.
Can it just have to breathe a lot of fire, take the wall down? But I guess it doesn't. It's undead. It could just sit there for like a couple of years, just blowing fire.
I personally think it's going to have ice breath. I think that's going to be the case. But I'm curious, like, can he go fly? Can he go over the wall now? Does the magic of the wall extend? And he can't?
I don't think he can cross the wall.
Okay.
Why not? Like,
because whites can't cross the wall.
Yeah, but they also can't jump over it.
But the Whites haven't been going hot air balloons to fly over. Like,
exactly.
They haven't tried.
They can't get past it because they can't go through the wall, but can they go over it, I think, is where.
Maybe they should just
catapult them over the wall.
I know. Is the Night King just going to shuttle his entire army over on the back of the Ice Dragon? I think it can go
over the wall, because even if, we had our theory that it would melt into the water, like, they could just fly around. Like, it can't cover the whole world. It definitely could get past the wall.
But is the wall going to come down?
Yes.
How?
It's got to be, yeah.
What if the dragon breathes, like, blue flame? It's hot, but it's blue. I feel like the show could do something like that, where he's still breathing flame, but it's, like, it's cold-looking flame, but it still, like, burns things. I could see the show doing that, where you're like, wait a minute, what?
I think he just grabs another javelin and hucks it at the wall, and then it blows up.
It blows up.
He finds a weak point. He's like, oh, that's the weak point.
And what are they doing up there? Are they just going around in circles? Are they? Here's a lot of the theory of why they think the Night King was waiting for a dragon to come over. Is because they've just been it's been taking them so long to get to the wall. It's obviously they could have walked there in any of these episodes and actually made it. But the fact that the Night King was sort of setting up this plot to eventually get a dragon somehow. Which leads to the belief that the Night King is somehow working, he has some sort of spy or something south of the wall. And a theory out there is that it's Bran. Is that Bran and the Night King? Bran and the Night King are communicating, or possibly there are theories out there that Bran is in fact the Night King, a little time displacement going on, but that Bran is working sort of with the Night King. And that Bran is letting him know that these dragons are back and all this stuff, and letting the Night King know when and how to do things.
I don't think it is, but it'd be really cool. Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's a willing traitor. I don't think Bran is a traitor, but maybe he's. There's different. I mean, the question is, could the Night King see what was going on south of the wall even at the start of the series? Because if he could, then he would just take his time, let everyone else kill each other first.
Well, the thing is, if he's part Bran or whatnot, he can see sort of the past and the future as well.
Bran one is, like, I think it's one of those situations with multiple theories. There's the Bran connection, which may or may not be true, like he is Bran, or there's some kind of connection, or just the fact that the Night King may have powers to see what's going on south of the wall, even if he doesn't have the connections of Bran. I think either way, like either theory leads to the point that he knew what was going south of the wall. And that's why he took his time getting down. He's like Renly times two. Remember Renly was taking as well to get up there? He's just taking all his sweet time.
Just having parties on the way.
there's this theory out there. I was kind of looking at it a little bit, so I might get a couple facts wrong here and there. But that Bran is, in fact, the Night King, where Bran is... He was going through time. He warged into Hodor in the past. Excuse me, got a hiccup here. And so he like goes back to when the Night King was created, and he kind of tries to stop it, and he sort of wargs a bit, and he ends up sort of putting part of his mind, or possibly becoming or taking over the mind of the Night King. So he is the Night King, and then he has to wait for like himself, Bran, to be born so many years later, and like all that stuff happening. There's this weird story going on. So like when he touched Bran, or when Bran was flying the Raven, like it isn't the Night King actually seeing Bran, the invisible Bran. It's the Night King just remembering, oh, at this moment, I was actually right here. Like being like, oh yeah, I was in a Raven at this moment. And he looks up and breaks it. Or he's like, I knew I was standing right next to me at this moment in time. And that's how he grabs his arm and stuff. And that's also why the Night King really wanted the three-eyed raven, Blood Raven there, dead, the old man in the tree, because the old man in the tree didn't tell Bran that Bran was actually the Night King. And so he was really mad at him for like 100 or 200 or however many years it's been. there's that theory out there, and I'm sort of leaning towards it after reading about it, that Bran has maybe not fully conscious, like you said, maybe not fully aware of what he's doing, but he's either evil or he's possibly on kind of both sides here.
I think it's really interesting, but I doubt that they'd throw something that complicated in so late in the game.
Hmm. We shall see, everybody. Yeah. We shall see.
Well, the Night King existed as that individual to get. Is it that guy that we see like in the previous flashback? It's that guy, and then you're saying then Bran.
Yes, because
went into him.
If you actually watch that episode where Bran travels back in time and sees it happening, the tree that the Children of the Forest stab the Night King against, or stabs the guy, and he becomes the Night King. They immediately go from that scene to Bran against the tree in the same position as the Night King, as he's sitting there in the cave.
It's just like the question is, why does it, I guess it makes it in more interesting if they do that. Why does the Night King need Bran to do this to him to become the Night King? Couldn't he just have become the Night King as that character that existed?
He could, but Bran went back in time and he tried to interfere and stop the Night King from happening, and he ended up going into his brain, just like he messed up with Hodor type of thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. So he's like been just warged into the Night King for how long's the time frame been? Has it been thousands of years or hundreds of years? I can't recall. But since
It should be thousands of years, and then do you think the Bran, usually when you go into another person, you're dead. So is Bran gonna die at some point? And then he goes back in time and stays like he's gonna have to die at some point, I would think, right?
Well, I mean, with the timing and the thing, like he messed up Hodor's mind and he didn't die in today's.
Yeah, but he didn't leave his consciousness in there though. I guess there's two different theories. One is he altered the Night King, and two is he actually goes into the Night King, like puts his consciousness in there. So yeah,
it's interesting. I don't know. It's something we're gonna wait and see because Bran's weird.
So I think you brought this question up, Kyle. Do you think he's gonna ride Night King's gonna ride a dragon, or he's just gonna control it by a distance?
Oh, that was a question I had. I would like to see him ride it, but also like if Bran is in fact like an evil dude or ends up being evil, it'd be cool if the Night King was riding his horse and then he had Bran, aka the dragon, like beside him, and like the two of them were like the evil two. Like that would be kind of cool, but I totally expect the Night King to be riding the dragon. So we have the dragon show up. They're throwing him on. I like how Sandor like stabs the captured white onto one of Drogon's spines to hold him.
Yeah,
it's like stay there. John gets left behind here. He falls through the ice. He goes. Drogon and them take off. I never knew that that Beric the Hound, and a random white would be dragon riders before John. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
But John crawls out of the ice, and all I could think was, "Damn it, man! Just lay there for 5 minutes, and then the whites will be gone, and then you don't have to worry about them." But he climbs out of the ice, and did you guys see this? Did you? I don't know if you went on Twitter or not, whatnot. But if you watch this scene, and I watched it in slow mo today, so it actually happens. But he pops out of John pops out of the broken ice. And Longclaw is right there, and you can see the wolf face on Longclaw, and the eye of it is like half white, half black, right? And then John sort of brings his hand up and grabs Longclaw with it, and in that motion, the eye of Longclaw becomes 100% black. And a lot of people are like, Longclaw opened up its eyes! And then other people think like just like a splash of water or something like knocked off the snowflake. Some people think it's like a shadow. But if you slow-mo that scene, like the Longclaw's eye goes from 50% black to 100% black as John is like coming out of the water. It's really weird. It's really weird. Don't think it was intentional, but there are people out there who are already making theories about it.
I thought Rhaegal was going to pop down and pick him up.
I thought that too.
Yeah, I'm waiting for like. Well, that's the other thing to talk about with the dragon being dead is the kind of ruins the Tyrion as a Targaryen theory because it's like now we don't have three riders.
Well, how can it ruin that theory? It just ruins that he's not going to be a rider.
Yeah.
Well, it just means.
And even then, we speculated for a long time that a dragon would die, but it might not be in this order too, right?
So now the dragon riders are Dany, Jon, and the Night King, aka Bran, because the three-eyed raven told him he would fly. I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I'm just throwing that theory out more and more. I'm throwing that theory out more.
I expected Bran to warg a dragon. I think a lot of us were expecting that.
Yeah. Just,
but an undead dragon?
Well, maybe he'll interfere with it a bit, right?
Oh, yeah. You could see, like, if Bran is still a good guy, he could, like, take over the undead dragon and take him away from the Night King. Mm. Sort of thing. So he could still be the hero. Very true. Very true. But instead of Rhaegal coming in and saving Jon, we have Benjen showing up, who I believe has never been called Cold Hands in the show, if I'm not mistaken. But he shows up. Totally wasn't expecting this. Totally don't know why he decided to do it now. Cool, I guess. I don't know. Ashley, what were you feeling about this?
I was just like, wow, that actor's been waiting a long time to get that phone call.
Well, he's smart enough to ride a horse, so... That's useful.
Yeah, but we had this Titanic moment where it was like, you can both get on the horse.
Yeah, I remember. That was a discussion in my group. It was like, totally could have both gotten on there.
I know John's soaking wet. He's wearing all this fur and leather, so he's probably really heavy. But goddamn it, both of you get on this horse. Or call in a giant elk. And a giant elk could carry you both, too.
It might have been better to both get on it if John can barely like do anything. Like, you need somebody to guide the horse.
Probably. Yeah, exactly. Benjen, hold him on the damn horse. But I guess they just wanted to give us a little... They're like, oh, somebody has to die that people care about, yeah. I guess.
Well, John maybe has to see Benjen at some point, too, so they just threw it in there.
It was like, Uncle Benjen? Later, get out of here. I don't care about you, kid.
He's like, how? No time for that. Just get out of here. Oh, okay.
It's like, John last episode finds out Bran and Arya are still alive. Now he's like, my uncle's still alive? He's like, when's my dad going to show up? Oh man.
Wait till the Night King gets a hold of him. Then he'll show up.
You know what? You know what we didn't have from the Night King bringing us stuff? We didn't have an undead Hodor, and we didn't have... Why weren't there children or more undead bears or horses or anything besides like...
Or ice spiders.
Yeah, or anything besides draft age wights.
Maybe he didn't want them to get burned. He's just been holding them, and it all goes to like he knew they were coming.
There were no giants, like, he just brought in like the measly human-sized whites to take him out. Yeah. Oh well.
Like it just doesn't make sense. It just he would just sit there for days and like I mean days. Or we don't know how long. All like the problems fall into each other, right? In terms of like the location and how long it took to get, you just want to sit there.
Yeah,
for how many days?
Reddit threads and stuff are saying that they were actually sitting on that rock for 4 days.
Oh, right. I totally believe that.
And now they lost all their ears when they came back, right? No,
and a lot of people time that out with like, which is saying that Thoros didn't die right away. It took him like a couple days to die, but it doesn't make sense that it took 4 days for the ice to refreeze. So give and take, whatever. They're all kind of figuring out. Doesn't really make sense.
Well, there's one solution for a lot of these problems. Just say the world is smaller in the TV show. It just is smaller, but
and it's shrinking apparently.
Yeah. But the problem is that they still use a lot of the distances like from the books. Don't mention the distance. Why are you doing?
Why are you doing that? Don't mention that.
You just say it's just a smaller world. That's why everybody gets around quicker.
So Danny's. I was having this talk with some friends. Was Dany sitting on the wall mourning the loss of her child, or was she sitting on that wall hoping and waiting for John's return?
I think she was upset about the dragon.
I agree with you, Ashley. I think that is indeed the case, but I've heard people are on the other fence. They're like, she was there because she was longing for John to return. She was hoping.
So. I think she should have been hoping for a dragon return, not for John.
Well, she's going to get that, too.
yes.
Just not the way she wants it. So John returns. Even though it's wildlings running the castle, they still blow the horn once for a returning brother, who is not, in fact, a brother anymore.
Hey, they have the same manuals.
that's what my roommate said. He's like, yeah, they read the manual. They know to blow it once. Come on. Except I doubt any of those wildlings can probably read. But they told him what was up. So then John wakes up and he's on a Targaryen boat by Eastwatch here. And we have this scene between Dany and John. John's going to bend the knee if he could.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this one? This was pretty interesting. This is John kind of finally realizing, he's like, hey, you stuck your neck out there for us, me, and you're a queen I could follow. I'll bend the knee. It seemed to me like he's saying, like, Lords of the North, I don't care if they follow me after this. You're the queen here, and that's how it should be. And I'm gonna bend the knee, and we'll just see what happens. Sounds like it to me.
Yeah, she lost the dragon for the North, basically, and for them. So that she's willing to sacrifice and to come help, and they need the other two dragons. So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but oh man, they are into each other. Let me tell you, she is like, damn, my nephew is looking good. Yeah, he's got the scars going. He's crazy. So
the scars was key too, right? Because it was always like she had heard that he took a knife in the heart or a dagger in the heart, and finally saw like some evidence of that. That was important.
Yeah, but she promises, you know, I'm gonna help you take these guys out. It's gonna happen. So I'm just waiting for John to bend a knee for the marriage proposal, and I keep saying that, but those two are totally gonna get married. It's
Danny seems a little bit more hesitant than John right now. She kind of pulls back at the end, right? She's kind of.
She thinks that he's beneath her.
He's too little. Yeah. You prefer somebody from House Manwoody, but.
Oh man, it was yeah. So we got that going on. So then we go to Winterfell, where there's also some crazy shit happening up here, where we have Arya and Sansa and the letter, which sort of drives this wedge. I'm kind of bummed that after all this time taking them to get back to each other, now we have to see them like at each other's throats. But this is Littlefinger working his chaos magic. That's what I'm going to call it. That's not too bad. Chaos magic. I like that, actually. Yeah. So,
they get Brienne to be sent away. I guess the Littlefinger indirectly wants her out of there, so sets that up.
Well, here's the deal. Go ahead, Ashley. Do it. Say it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He wanted her around, so I feel like that's why Sansa got rid of her.
Is that what you... I could see that. I could see that. I can see her... Like, Littlefinger saying, hey, you don't know what side Brienne is going to take when you two start fighting, so you should probably get rid of her because you don't know. And that is also because it's stripping Sansa of any of like her support, so that she has to rely on Littlefinger more, because she can rely on Brienne to help and do things and be a strong fighter and whatnot. But if you take away Brienne and then you take away Arya, Sansa pretty much just has Littlefinger left at the castle to rely on.
Yeah, why would Littlefinger even bring Brienne up? Like, if he wants Brienne there, he should say nothing.
Yeah, I just thought that it was weird that it felt like to me he was reminding Sansa that she had Brienne, but again, I'm just...
At the same time, undercutting it, because he said that she served, that he's born to protect both daughters.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it makes sense that why Littlefinger doesn't want her there. I mean, she doesn't like Littlefinger, and he's scared of her, so he wants her to be gone. Mm. Like,
but this was...
Honestly, the whole Sansa thing this episode is what pissed me off.
One of the weakest parts of the episode. Yeah, probably the weakest part of the episode. Like, is that interaction and what's going on with it. Till the end. Then that was a bit confusing.
This was definitely, like, confusing in certain ways. Everybody I've talked to has different ideas about what it all meant. And eventually, of course, we're going to figure it out. But my big question is, like, who sent this letter from King's Landing? It's not Cersei's not inviting them down. Why would she do that? I don't get that. I'm assuming Littlefinger drafted it, and I can't help but think that like Sansa also drafted it with him, because as soon as they get the letter, Sansa immediately is like, "Well, I can't go. Brienne, you go." Like, if Littlefinger had sent that letter and Sansa's like, "All right, I guess I'll go," Littlefinger would have been like, "Oh shit, my plan didn't work." Mm. So I feel like Sansa had to be in on the letter. Otherwise, it could have easily backfired in his face, and Sansa would have just marched off to King's Landing. And all the looks that Sophie Turner was giving Brienne, it was just like, it looks like she's in on this, and it's I don't quite understand what exactly is happening. But apparently, Brienne's going away, and Sansa will have Podrick to protect her. But then we have an actual physical bag of faces. I did not think it was going to be that, like, oh, I'm just hiding a bag of faces underneath my bed. It's like, this weirded me out. I thought it was, like, more magical where the faces were always on and she could just kind of, like, woof and, like, have a different face.
Yeah, it's like, where did she get Walder's? Oh, I guess.
Well, she killed him.
Killed him and used it, right? Like, yeah. She used the face, but it's still, like, a magical element to it, right? The face is maybe just containing the essence or something, and then they use the magic to
put on the form. She actually needs a face. Like, so she killed a serving girl at the Freys. Just a random innocent serving girl.
There's plenty of dead people on the ground. Maybe she just took one from.
Oh yeah, just lying around in Freyville. Just, you know. But there is this bag of faces, and then they try to play the game of faces, and then Arya gives Sansa the knife.
Yeah.
And what the fuck is happening? What the hell is going on here?
Why is she giving Sansa shit? Like, seriously.
Yeah, that was one of the weaker. Like, it's just like, really? Like, everyone knew that she was forced into writing the letter. She's like, oh, I would have had myself be tortured. Well, like, screw you. Like, what the hell are you talking about? They would have just put your stamp on it. It doesn't make any sense. Like, all the things that Sansa did, that's nothing. That letter.
Yeah, and even Cersei thought that Ned would get pardoned.
Yeah.
And go to the wall. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just Joffrey being a psycho ass.
Plus Littlefinger probably, you know, pushing him forward to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
I'm just saying, like, Sansa made the right move in that situation. Absolutely. She, like, Arya would have gotten everyone pissed off and
Been dead. If Rob had taken that note and been like, all right, well, she's my sister, I can trust her. And then Rob went to bend the knee and he got killed too. Like, would Sansa have done the right thing?
Then Rob would have been an idiot. Like, the second they got the letter, they all knew that, like, yeah,
but would you still consider Sansa of doing the right thing?
Yeah, like, I mean, the letter is actually so, like, so obvious. It's so, like, oh, father's a traitor and blah, blah, blah. It's like, this has to be, like, a bullshit letter. It's, like, so over the top. The writing there?
Well, as soon as, Caitlin read the letter, she's like, oh, this is really Cersei just telling us that she has Sansa as a hostage.
True.
Like, do you think the thing what Arya would have found out is, and I don't remember how much they do it on the show, is Sansa talking to Cersei about Ned's plans, right? Even that is, we don't even know if that's really happened in the books. It could just be Cersei making it up as an excuse. I don't think they didn't really have any dirt on Sansa. Like, this is what pushes Arya against her. But in the end, I think they're actually making a deal at the end. I think Arya is not going to go after her, and they're going to kill Littlefinger. It's my prediction. Remember I said it last time, too.
Yeah. I can see from a writing standpoint the reason that Arya gave the knife to Sansa. Now, within the confines of the show, I have no idea. But from a writing perspective, giving Sansa the dagger and eventually she can kill Littlefinger with it is kind of this full, nice Hollywood full circle where it's like, all right, well, Littlefinger had this dagger and it got to tried to kill Bran, and that set off everything in motion. And having it come full circle where Sansa kills Littlefinger with the knife that started it all is such a nice Hollywood bow that I can understand why they would do it. But like the characters in the show, I didn't understand why she was handing over the knife and stuff.
Yeah. Well, Littlefinger's gonna get killed, and then next season he'll be back with blue eyes.
prediction, guys. Who's gonna die next episode?
Other than Littlefinger?
Think Littlefinger's gonna die next episode?
No. Nope.
But it would be useful. It could happen though. In a sense, what's the surprises next episode? They need some up north, right? Boom.
He hasn't been utilized enough to make him, you know.
He's supposed to get married too. Is that all going to happen in one episode? I guess he could get. I still think that he's going to go for the marriage. Like, what is his plan? He's trying to get Sansa to be reliant only on him. But who else could die?
Cersei.
Next episode.
Cersei could die next episode.
It could happen. I mean, there could be a huge. The dragons could get out of control too if something happens.
There you go. Well, if they're having this meeting now, next episode, which I assume is going to be next episode. I mean,
is Sandor going to be down there too? Is he coming along too? Because the Hound, he's going to meet the Mountain, the Hound of the Mountain. Clegane Bowl.
Oh, no. I hate it. I hate it.
Clegane Bowl with dragons watching.
Here's the thing.
Maybe it is Clegane Bowl time.
We talked about, like, how is he going to get to King's Landing when he was going north the whole season? Well, now he suddenly just goes down to King's Landing at the end of the season.
Sandor did get bit in the hand by the white, but this isn't Walking Dead rules, right? It doesn't take a bite. You have to actually have to die, like, north of the wall.
There's
right?
like 50 bites. Like it.
Okay. Just making sure. Just checking. I know they change the rules up every episode, so I really can't follow it. But Cersei could go down next episode. I mean, Jon's probably not going to die, but that'd be crazy.
So just a quick point. It's interesting that Jon and Beric can go back and forth through the wall, and that doesn't affect them at all. Hmm. Again, it's more TV show stuff. I wonder if Jon in the books can go through the wall.
I feel like Beric is going to die next episode.
Yeah,
or Beric's days are numbered. He doesn't have his healer anymore, so he's on his last life. Like
where
the
is he going? Where is Beric going now? Is he staying up north, or is he for some reason going south?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You're right. He is staying up north. So we're probably not even going to see him next episode. What am I talking about? Yeah, because we had that scene with him and the Hound at the boat, and it seemed like the Hound is going to go south, and Beric is going to stay, and he's going to be the shield that guards the realms of men. So
what the heck was the point of the Hound going all the way up north just to not even meet Sansa and then go all the way back down south? I mean, come on.
Sansa was not his mission, Ashley. Get those hormones out of the way.
He doesn't like gingers anymore. Remember, he's burned.
Gingers burned him.
Although it would have been awesome if he'd gone to Winterfell next episode, just showed up. That would have been pretty epic.
Yeah, because then Littlefinger would have another guy to be mad at.
Littlefinger would shit himself.
Oh, then Littlefinger's having his wedding, and then it's like, does anyone object? And the Hound like bursts in.
I do. So that's the episode. Any last little notes or anything you guys want to bring up before we wrap things up?
Arya, stop being mean to Sansa. Think of the, you know, like, if fandom shits on Sansa enough. I don't need more of it.
Yeah. Very true. So, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of A Podcast of Ice and Fire, where we talked about episode 6 of season 7 of Game of Thrones. Make sure you tune in next week. We'll be talking about the finale, season 7. And make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at A Podcast of Ice and Fire. Join the forums, join the discussion, and we'll see you next week.
See you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
It's going to be a fun finale, I think. It's going to be an extra long episode.
Yeah, it's like 80 minutes or something.
Ah.
Well, this one was 71 minutes, I think, so it was an extra 11 minutes or whatever. But yeah, it's going to be crazy. It's going to prepare us for next season, because I heard that, like, they're most likely all going to be around 90 minutes or so in the final season. It's all going to be like little movies.
So do you think they're going to show Viserion again, or just save him for next season? Like, I guess cool it down till next season.
I think save him. If next episode's going to primarily be King's Landing, they'll probably not show Beyond the Wall next episode. I mean,
I could.
Yeah, Winterfell and King's Landing.
I do see the possibility of having like a final shot of like Beric and who maybe Tormund is still up there chilling at Eastwatch, and they're like, oh shit, they're coming. They see the whites coming in.
Yeah.
And then they're sitting there, and all of a sudden, woof, the dragon like flies up the wall and lands on the wall or something, and then being like, oh no, boom, like roll the credits. Like, I could totally see that. But I don't think we're going to have like a major scene with the dragon or anything.
Well, it's like they have no reason to either. His plan was to Night King was to wait for this. Well, now he has it and he can come, or he just really took his time. Well, he's still only like a couple hours away now, so he should show up either way to get there.
Yeah. But we shall see. Awesome, guys. Sorry.
One final question. So yeah, do you don't think the wall's going to come down, or it is? And you think that they will be saved till next season?
I can't see within the rules of the show how the wall's going to come down, but I really want it to.
You could just pull out the horn and blow it. And it's like...
Yes, the horn that we've never talked about once. Ashley, what were you going to say?
Oh, the wall's going to definitely come down. I think it's just too cool of a shot for them not to do.
Yeah.
I just don't know how, but it'll happen.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out. They'll figure out a way. Even if it makes no sense, they'll do it.
Like with the bear that attacked them, for example, is it still like I'm just trying to think of the things that are undead. Could it still like generate fire?
Well, I mean, I said it earlier, and I kind of believe it's going to be true. I think now the dragon's going to breathe blue flame.
Okay, so still fire, but blue flame.
So it's gonna look like ice, but it's actually going to be hot. And that it has a visual difference, but they can like burn the wall down. I'm kind of, now that I said that out loud, I'm sort of feeling that. Or I'm sort of thinking the show's going to go that way.
Yeah. I think still some sort of fire makes more sense than ice. I don't know. Like, why can it do ice? Why not the bear then? Why can't the bear shoot out ice? Like,
because he doesn't have the air conditioner in his damn stomach. No, he doesn't have those glands and stuff. The dragons have the fire glands and shit.
It has fire glands, but how would that suddenly make ice? It's the complete opposite.
It's goddamn doesn't... magic. I mean, you don't need reason.
Because until it breathes ice, though, it shouldn't really be called an ice dragon. Even that, like, because like the ice dragons in that story was made out of ice. Yeah. It's not made out of ice.
It's an undead dragon. It's a zombie dragon. It's a zombie dragon. It's a white dragon.
White dragon, whatever. Like, I don't know. They had a name for the bear, didn't they? Did they call it like a werebear, or did they call it? You just apply that same name to it, but zombie dragon, I guess for now.
We don't use the Z word. We don't use the Z around here. Awesome. Well, cool. We shall see. Cool. Awesome, guys. I'm gonna head out, grab a little bit before my house fills up with people, and
sure. Yeah, send me a record then.
Will do. Sounds good. Ashley, good talking to you.
You too.
Hopefully be talking to you next week. And take care, guys.
Cheers.
All right. Bye. Bye.